Hello, beautiful people. You are listening. I am Antoina, and this is your host, Patricia Manley. I am a first-generation immigrant, a mom, a woman in tech, an international speaker, a healthy living evangelist, but above all, I am finally myself. This is your podcast, a space where you can listen to stories and lessons learned that can inspire you to grow and become a better version of yourself. Real life stories that will show you that you can also be the person you want to be. Practical tips and wisdoms with no filters coming from the heart, always with humor and that Latina drama twist that everybody loves. Be ready for a lot of fun, but also a lot of empowerment, because if I can do it, you can do it too. Let's get started. Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another episode of I Am Antoina. And this time, for the second time, I have my amazing friend Wendy Griffith in the episode. And if you remember back then, we did an episode about creating healthy hacks for busy career moms. And why? Because she is a certified health and wellness coach, and she absolutely loves helping busy career moms thrive through motherhood. And what I love about Wendy is that she truly believes that a mom should be able to have a fulfilling career and enjoy the everyday life as a mom. However, this time I wanted to talk to her about something a little bit more personal, and I knew she was going to be the right person to talk about this. And it is all the things that you do when you are navigating that emotional journey of IVF. And she is one person that went through that process. And for many, many years, I was wondering, did I did the right thing for her? Did I support her in the right way? And today we're going to talk a little bit about both sides, how that person that is going through that is feeling about it, but also how we can support any of our friends that is going through IVF. And I know some people have so many questions about that, that I decided to make that episode. And I'm so grateful that Wendy decided to share her story with me. So are you ready? Let's get started. Hello, Wendy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, especially with this gorgeous sunshine today.
Oh my God, we were almost thinking to cancel this for different reasons, but one of the main ones is this sunny weather outside.
And here I know, straight after this, I'm heading to the beach.
Yeah, exactly. I'm heading to somewhere outside for sure, because the beach is a little bit far from me, but definitely it's a lovely day. And so nice to see you. So nice to have you again in my podcast.
I know, you know, this is the first podcast that I've actually been on a second time. So yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I always have you in my head about to talk about this subject, but you know, from one reason or the other one, I never kind of like approach you asking you for that because it's a little bit of a touchy subject. But then, yeah, I say, a few days ago, I was like, I'm going to ask her if she would like to talk about
it. Yeah, I'm so glad that you did. I'm so happy to talk about the subject.
Yes. But before talking about navigating through IVF and all that kind of thing, please introduce you for the new people that is going to listen or is listening to this podcast.
Well, yes, I just love this podcast so much. Hi, everyone. I'm Wendy. So I'm actually based here in Norfolk, in sunny Norfolk. Finally, we've been waiting for summer to arrive. And yes, Patricia and I go way back. We first met back in our corporate careers like 17 years ago now.
Oh, don't say that.
How mad is that? So yes, I'm an ex-corporate girl turned entrepreneur. And for the past 10 years, I have been a coach, working with women through health, through business, and really just helping women to create their most thriving life, whatever that looks like for them. So I'm really passionate. I'm multi-passionate. I love all things from sort of health and personal development and growth to business. My background's in marketing, so I absolutely love marketing and business. You know, you can always find me answering messages in my DMs. People ask me things. How do you do this? How do you do that? And so, yeah, I love food, I love podcasts, I love dogs, and I definitely love meat. So I'm not a vegan, I'm South African. That is my affiliation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, talking with you, Wendy, like we can talk so many things, and that is the reason, and you are passionate about so many things.
That might have something to do with the ADHD, but you know, that's another whole podcast episode.
We will do at some point very soon, by the way.
Yeah.
But one of the things, as I say before, I wanted to bring you was because I know that you went through this emotional journey about IBS, and now you have the amazing, beautiful Jesse with you, which is such a beauty. But I want to start today with, can you share with us, how was that personal experience of going through IBS as an immigrant woman in a country where you don't have family, you have your husband, but you don't have, you know, that support that sometimes we feel that we need. How was that for you?
Yeah, so it was such a surreal experience because I kind of almost, to share the story, I need to kind of take it back a few years to the fact that, you know, so much of being a woman is, there's a lot of expectation. And I think not from just society, but from yourself. And you think, okay, well, yeah, I'm going to, you know, work my career and get to a point, and then I'm going to, you know, get married, or what, maybe you decide not to get married. But, you know, I got married at 25 and we decided like we wanted to wait a few years, you know, and have fun and travel and do all the things. And we're both building our careers, working in London, loving life and, you know, living the dream, as they say, buying our first house, all that kind of stuff. And then it was at the age of 31 that I really felt that, you know, that feeling. And you may have experienced that, you might not. You might think, well, I've never sort of had that pull. And I didn't for a long time. And then it was just suddenly overnight at 31, I just felt this like overwhelming desire that I was ready to be a mom. And again, that you just expect, you think, okay, well, you know, you hear people say it might take, you know, a few months to get pregnant, whatever the case is. So, you know, off we go, we're ready to start trying, as they say. And also that in itself, because I don't know about you, but I didn't know what like that meant. I actually was so naive about, you know, cycles. And now like, it's crazy to even say, because now I plan my work, I plan my life around my menstrual cycle, because I know when I'm at my best and when I'm at my worst. But at the time, I know this is going to sound crazy, it's going to blow your mind, but I didn't even know really, how embarrassing is this, is that you can only get pregnant on a certain few days of the month.
Oh yeah. It's like,
is that you as well? Because they put the fear of God in you when you're a teenager, when they're doing sex education, that if you ever have sex, you will fall pregnant. And so you have this, I totally understand why they do that. And I'm like, I want them to do that to my daughter too. But there is that thing that where you just think, oh gosh, like if I have sex, I'm going to fall pregnant. Absolutely. And so you don't actually realize that it's just down to a couple of days essentially when you're ovulating and understanding all that. So the whole trying thing for me was hilarious, because I was like, so how do you try? And obviously then you start getting all the different advice. And I remember having this friend who was like, well, we decided to start trying and we had sex every single day for 30 days and we fell pregnant. And I was like, okay, so maybe that's what I need to do. Or like, you know, you don't know. And who do you talk to? And you Google stuff. And, you know, so, and then you get all the stories where people are like, oh my gosh, like, you know, we fell pregnant instantly, or the second month or the third. But for me, you know, by sort of the third or fourth month of not being on birth control, and I was like, this isn't happening, you know, because again, we live in the society, it was like instant, like absolutely, you make a decision, you want it to happen, you know. And there was, and I'm such a driven person that I'm like, right, if I say I'm going to have a baby, like I am going to have a baby. And I like set my career up in a way. I'd left my corporate job, I'd set up as self-employed, I knew that I wanted to foster a lifestyle where I could still work and be a fully present mom. So I'd created this whole thing, and I'm like, okay, now where's the baby? Seriously.
Yeah. And so you have that lease, right? You have that lease.
Oh, 100%.
Marry at 25. My lease was very similar to you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to marry at 25, 26, 4 years. By the age of 30, I'm going to have the kids, the house, the dog, the husband, happy life. Like, we are ready.
Yeah.
In my case, it didn't happen in that way at all.
and about babies was the same thing. I moved from the company that we worked together.
Yes.
The other company, one, because I wanted to stop traveling, was a consultancy company. I wanted to stop traveling and I wanted to wait a whole year to get all the
maternity benefits. Yeah.
Maternity benefits and then start. So obviously after the first year, I was like, right, where is the baby? Like, let's start. And it happened.
Like, I'm ready.
And it happened, like you say, it happened immediately at all. And then is when I realized that actually you just have, the reality is you just have a couple of chances every month for that happening. So it took, for us, took a little bit as well, but it was exactly like you have painted. Yeah, I have those expectations. Yeah.
It's
to have it like that.
So this was probably, now we're talking sort of April, May 2014, when I'm like, okay, seriously, like, what's going on here? And the thing is, I'd actually not been on the pill for quite a long time. That was kind of a blessing, actually, in terms of my IVF story, because the thing with you know, when you feel like you might need to go and speak to the doctor, and I would say, I wish someone had said to me, if you and your partner are healthy adults, man and woman, you know, trying consistently to have a child while you, you know, on your ovulation time in the month for more than 6 months and it's not happening, seek help.
Yeah.
Because the NHS, you can absolutely understand here in the UK, will say, oh, you know, you need to have been trying for a year. And actually, if you're young, which I was considered young at 31, yes. Bizarre, isn't it? Like, I was considered young. It's like, oh, actually, you know, it needs to be about 18 months. But the good thing for me is that because I'd come off my pill ages before that, when I'd actually learned a lot about the pill and the hormonal, and actually, I know that Davina McCall has done a really fantastic documentary on the pill very recently that I would really highly recommend you checking out, about, you know, how outdated that form of contraception had. But I'd started on a health journey and really didn't have hormones in my body and was looking, you know, so for us, because on my records, it had shown that I was not on the pill, I was able to actually go into the doctors after about trying for about 9 months and say, I have not been on the pill for over 18 months and I'm still not falling pregnant.
Yeah.
So that was a little tip there that really helped me. And so that was when they were like, okay, we'll refer you for testing. So, you know, actually, and even that whole journey, I remember us, you know, going to a local clinic, my husband doing, because what they do is they actually start normally with the man, because that is the least invasive thing. Because all they really have to do is give a sperm sample. And so that is pretty straightforward for men to do. Although they will tell you, oh, it's so embarrassing and I have to go in a room. And you're like, really? Really? So, you know, there's that. And it actually came back. And again, you learn so much about biology and things. And even with sperm, there's like three factors, you know,
absolutely. Yeah.
That you have to consider. You just think, oh, you just assume everything's going to work, don't you? And it's until it doesn't. And I think that's like health, isn't it? You know, people take their health for granted until such time as their health becomes, you know, everything, or they get sick, or so for us, we were then, and I remember going back into the doctor's office and I actually caught her Googling my result, like the results that we had, which you can understand, because how is a GP, a general practitioner, supposed to know every single thing about every single thing in the world? I just bless their hearts. So she was sort of Googling and she was like, right. And then they'd recommended we go on some supplements and we got put into the IVF queue basically. So fast forward a few months, we eventually meet with the consultant. Now, this is actually all through the NHS, which I would say is, you know, we are so blessed and privileged in the UK to have that opportunity, because I know friends in other countries, especially South Africa, where I'm from, you know, people go straight to having to pay. There's no way that you could get IVF. But IVF is very much a postcode lottery in the UK. So some parts of the UK, you are given, you know, three cycles, mostly you're given two cycles. And what that actually means, a cycle, because this is what I didn't understand, is a cycle actually means, you know, they do the egg extraction, you know, combine it depending on your circumstances with the sperm, put it back in you.
Yeah.
And depending, you might get eggs from that, that, you know, they put fresh back into you, but then you might have some that have actually fertilized and moved to what's called blastocyst stage, where that's like day five, the cells start dividing. So then they freeze those, and then you can have those put back in you if the first fresh round doesn't work. And that whole process is considered a cycle.
Yeah. And it's amazing how you're talking about these cycles and how you turn something that in your mind from growing up, like it happened in this way, with, you know, a girl and a boy, and they do something, blah, 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 and then it's going to happen like that. That expectation is going into understanding all this process.
Once you start going down this whole road, you realize, like, how does anyone ever get pregnant? I don't know that. Because it is miraculous what has to happen for a pregnancy to occur. And so, I just wanted to explain that, because each component of a cycle is considered a round. So sometimes people, like people in the IVF circles, like if you meet someone who's had IVF, they'll be like, how many cycles did you have? Like it's like a, you know, like how many cycles did you have kind of thing. Kind of you get down with the lingo of it all. But honestly, at the time, I didn't have any friends who'd gone through IVF. At that point, I felt extremely alone. And I'm a pretty self-assured, confident person, as in I'd done a lot of personal growth through my business. But even still, and I also had my faith as a Christian on my side, but even still, I felt so alone. And it also didn't help that you're starting to be at that age where people start having babies.
Yeah.
And it just, every pregnancy announcement feels like someone is literally gut punching you.
Yes.
And you obviously are so happy for those people, because you also know like what a miracle it is for them to become pregnant, and you're so delighted for them. But a little part of you dies inside every time. And it was relentless. It was absolutely, I mean, we were in like a home group with some of our church friends, and it was literally like every single person in the group fell pregnant except me. And it was like,
yeah. And the questions, right?
And the questions, because when you've been married for 5 or 6 years with no child, then you're in your early 30s, you know, the questions are relentless. And that is the biggest thing I took from it, is that, you know, if I see a woman without a child, the last thing I would ever ask her is, do you want kids? Firstly, because what I've seen nowadays more than ever is a lot of women choosing not to have children.
Yes.
So the fact that there is the societal expectation that you do that, you get the, you know, job, degree, whatever you want to do, and then you have get married and you have kids and, you know, da, 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 da. Like, I just think for me now, it is a very valid choice that many people choose not to actually have children. So therefore, I just will not ask. But what I find is there's something about me that people just do tell me. Maybe it's because of my energy around the topic, or a lot of people would come to me and also I chose to start sharing about it, not while I was going through it, because I always think it's really difficult to help people from your wounds. I think it's really helpful now. I can speak about that phase of my life, the scars, of without any emotion, without any pain. But at the time, it was unbearable pain.
Yeah. So one of the things I always wondering, because we have this conversation, I remember we traveled.
Oh, yeah, because we went over to Las Vegas for our businesses, and we shared a room, and we were talking about this. I remember this so vividly.
Yeah. And then I read up a blog that you have.
I was interviewed,
And I remember clearly the things that you say in that blog about, please don't ask the following questions, like asking someone that is going through this journey, and then people want the best for you, want resourceful and helpful, but actually you're not helping. So so what is those questions?
Okay, let me try and remember them, because there are some humdingers in there. So
when you're going to difficult times, because when you know that is one thing, is like you say, like, and I agree with you, don't go and ask questions about, do you want to have babies? No. I agree with you.
It's a very personal question. Would you like a very personal someone to say, how much money do you earn? Like, you would never do that.
Exactly. So
why do you think you get to ask someone about their fertility status? It's honestly, but you know what? people mean well and people just want the best for you. So really, it's like, I'm the sort of person who will always assume the best intentions of others, rightly or wrongly. But you know, if for me, I just, and I had sort of perfected my questioning. And I suppose you will probably understand this a little bit from the point of view of when you've had your first and everyone's going, when you're having your second.
Yeah.
And I also just want to say this before I explain the questions, because it applies to both, that in the UK, I don't think people are aware that second child infertility, the rates are so high.
Yes.
And actually what I've since learned is that second child infertility would even say is even more of a painful experience for people, because a lot of people found it very easy to have their first and they just assumed they would have more. And to have that dream shattered, I would say for me, it would almost have felt worse than if I'd not been able to even have one child, because at least then my life would have taken a different path, or my husband and I would have pursued more of our careers or gone traveling or had dogs or whatever it was, or adopted. You know, there was all those opportunities for us. But, you know, if you have this idea of what your family is going to look like, so having had a lot of friends who are still struggling with second child infertility, please, please, please be so sensitive. When you see someone with one child who might look a little bit further along in age, please do not ask them when they're having another child, because I can tell you categorically, their story will either be a story of recurrent miscarriage or inability to fall pregnant or early menopause, or something would have happened. So please, please, please. And so these questions, so, you know, a lot of the time it was, you know, so when you're having kids, I mean, when you are literally on the bathroom floor crying every month when you get your period, and then someone at a barbecue asks you that question in front of everybody else, like, you just want the floor to open up and swallow you.
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. So that's just the first thing. Just be sensitive. Just think, like, if you were saying to someone, show me your boobs, like, you just wouldn't do that. It's like, it's so exposing. Sorry, I don't know why I thought of that example randomly.
It's a really clear example.
Yeah, but it's that whole thing of, like, you know, anyway. So the other thing is, when you do then share with your circle, and I would be very selective about who you share your fertility struggles with, just because, unfortunately, in this world that we live in, everybody has an opinion and everybody's Dr. Google. So everybody has got a friend who has a friend who has a friend who went through IVF, whatever. The worst thing you can say to somebody who's a, you know, struggling with infertility is, this was the other one, this was the humdinger. Oh, but it'll be fine, sweetheart. Like, you could just have IVF. Okay. Do you actually realize the statistics of success around IVF? It's 1 in 3, 33%. So even if you go through that experience, or, you know, and are lucky enough to have it on the NHS, and, but even then, so many friends I know have had, I've got friends of ours, a couple that have had 10 cycles of IVF over 10 years. Like, that is the equivalent of a house they paid to have a child. So it's not just as simple as, oh, you can have IVF. So just being sensitive to that, even though technology has moved on dramatically. I mean, I just have to say that I went through this journey 7 years ago, and we were saying before we even started recording, like, what people can do now is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. And it's become a lot more accessible. And so it's just being aware that there's still ultimately, you know, you've still got the issue of, like, whether or not the sperm is healthy, whether or not the eggs are, you know, eggs are fresh, whether or not, you know, they are, you know,
so young. And the
problem that we have in this society is that women are, you know, and I know this was our choice, I know it's what we fought for, but, you know, we've gone to university, we've got into our careers. By the time we're at a point where we can step away from our careers in order to be able to come back at a certain point, or with maternity benefit, because the cost of childcare in this country is astronomical. So, you know, to make it actually worth your while without having to then give up your career to stay at home, the career that you studied for, you paid student loans for, that you worked for. I mean, don't even get me started on that whole subject. By the time you actually start having kids, a lot of the time my friends were finding, because I now have been through this so much with a lot of friends and have helped and coached a lot of people through this, is their eggs are, they're in early menopause, perimenopause.
Yeah.
And so it's not even their fault. It's just that you're, you know, you lose, you're born with a certain number of
fertility. Yeah.
And fertility. And then that degrades over time. It's just nature, which is why people used to have kids, you know, back in the Bible, and when they were 15, 16 years old, because that's actually where you're at your prime fertility. So yeah. When we're pushing the boat out till we're 30, even 40, our bodies are so confused.
Yeah. And yeah, totally.
So yeah, you can just have IVF, not as simple. Also just even honestly, when I then had my IVF and people knew the journey I went on, and then had my, and then were like, oh, so when you're having your next? And it was, and actually just to share with you quite personally, I actually, ironically, then fell pregnant naturally.
Wow. After
I had my IVF. When my daughter was 9 months old. So I went through this whole, oh my gosh, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I couldn't get pregnant. Now I'm going to have two kids under 18 months. I am one of those moms. Like, it was just this whole, like, serious mind blow. Like, honestly, but unfortunately, I did have a miscarriage at 6 weeks. And so that whole journey of, like, falling pregnant easily or without knowledge gave me such an empathy for those people that do fall pregnant who don't mean to fall pregnant. Because at that point, I think my heart was quite hardened to people saying to me, oh, we just tried and it just happened first time. Like, and you're like,
yeah. Yeah,
so it just, that gave me a lot of empathy for that because it happened to me. And then also the empathy of losing, and a lot of women will go through IVF and have miscarriages. And so I was very grateful that that happened really early on, because I just, not that there's a sliding scale of grief on miscarriage at all, but for me, I just couldn't imagine getting through to 12 weeks, going to that first scan and seeing there's no heartbeat. Like, that would have destroyed me. So all kind of a lesson in learning and just being really sensitive to, like, and I share all that with you because I want you to understand that this is all over the course of like 3, 4, 5 years. And it was actually only after my 40th birthday last year that my husband and I drew a line in the sand and said, right, we are no longer hoping for, praying for, wishing for another natural pregnancy, because we decided not to do IVF again just because it was very emotionally draining.
Yeah.
And so it was that real line in the sand. I was like, I'm 40 years old. I know women have babies in their 40s, but for me, it just felt like I feel really content, really happy to be a family of three.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is wonderful. That is wonderful. I think a friend of mine also talked to me that she hasn't been able to have kids, and now that it's like you, she put that
a line in the sand. Yeah,
yeah.
So good for your mental health to make those decisions. And we've been through the process of selling all of our baby things and giving things away, and it's been a very, it's taken me about 6 months, and I'm still got some things I need to donate because it's a real grieving.
Yeah, totally, totally. One of the things that she also tell me about those questions is about, oh, whatever, have you thought about adopting, or, you know, is eventually going to happen. Don't worry, eventually, keep trying. And, you know, like those things, like, it's God's decision.
Oh my golly. I mean, also the miscarriage thing, can I just come back on? When a woman has a miscarriage, please don't say to her, oh, God must have known something wasn't right. Like, oh my golly, please don't say that to a woman who's just had a miscarriage. But yes, I don't think the movies help with adoption. Okay, so can I just explain how it works in the UK to people? Because again, this was something I was completely naive about, is that in the UK, you cannot just call up an adoption agency like in America or in other parts of the world and go, hey, I want a baby, and go on a list and then get picked by somebody who wants to give up a baby. And yeah, that's, I know that happened in Friends with Monica and Chandler, but that's not how it works in the UK. In the UK, in order to adopt, you need to foster.
Yeah. It's a
lame. People don't know this. So you actually have to go through the process of becoming a foster parent. And fostering is a whole different ballgame. That is such a vocation and a calling to foster children, bring them into your home, damaged children who've been removed from homes, etc. So you have to go through fostering. And actually, it's only through the fostering process that you then go through all the checks for adoption, etc. And actually, your child that's been earmarked through the fostering process for you can still be removed from you, like right up until the adoption process. And I don't want to say this because I don't know that this is true, but I feel like there's even something once, until those legal adoption papers have been signed, like the UK has really different laws. Like even with surrogacy, like the baby is technically the mother who birthed it. Yeah. Before it's then legally handed over to the surrogate parent. Like there's, we've got some quite, I would say antiquated, but we've got some very different systems. So please don't say to a woman struggling with infertility, struggling with IVF, oh, you can just adopt, because it is not a straightforward process here in the US.
It's so likely that people make that comment, as I say.
You would actually have to go to another country or try going through. And I mean, my sister tried to adopt from the US even, and they sunk about $20,000 on trying to adopt from China before they gave up.
Yeah. 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 It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And talking about that, if you want to advise, and especially immigrant women, because as I say, we have this thing that we might not have the support, just our husband, and maybe our husband is from a different culture that take things in a different way. But what advice will you tell them if they are going into that process of IVF? What kind of like lesson learns from you now after 7 years? Mean,
looking back, even though I had a strong support system around me in the sense of my husband, and I had some really wonderful friends and friends from church as well, who were praying for me and really coming around me, I would say it's still a very lonely place. And fortunately, when I'd actually gone into hospital to actually have a cyst removed. So when I went through my IVF process, they do the man first, and then, you know, they refer you based on the, and then actually when I went for my first consultation for IVF, they found a very large cyst on my ovary, and they said, well, we need to get that removed before you have your IVF. And so I went in for a routine procedure, and even that was really miraculous because the waiting list for that was like a year. And I got an appointment in like 3 weeks. There was a cancellation. Anyway, I was next in a bed next door to somebody, and we were same age, same everything. And we actually became friends, and we took each other's numbers because we were both quite drugged up when we came out, and the doctor was talking at us and telling us what they found. And we were, I was kind of listening to her because I hadn't gone into my surgery yet. And by the time I came out, she'd come off the, like, you know, so we bonded and we met and we became really good friends. And actually she went through her IVF journey, and she was 3 months ahead of me. So she actually coached me through like what to do with the injections and all the different things that you have to do. And yeah, it was so good to have somebody. So I would say, like, look at joining like a Facebook support group and maybe connecting with someone either, you know, through a local baby group or like, and if you actually go, you might not have a religious belief, but if you go to a church will connect you with people to help you. That is such a great place to go. In the UK is a church. They will signpost you to the support that you need. So even if you don't believe, is my best advice, honestly. So because they will be able to help you and linking up with someone. So I had my friend Jo, and she's still my friend to this day. Our daughters are actually 6 months apart.
Oh God.
Because her baby was born premature. Yeah. So not only did she have the whole IVF journey, she then had a baby born 10 weeks early. So we've really been through it together. And so, yeah, and she was just such a fantastic coach to me and saying what I needed. Because I'd be like, right, how do I mix this? And you've got all the meds at home, and it's a real, real minefield. But yeah, I would just say that
find
a community that understands. But I would also just caution against, you know, getting sucked into negativity. So I know when I realized I had ADHD a few years ago and, you know, went through the diagnosis journey and all that kind of thing, you know, I actually ended up leaving some of the Facebook groups because, you know, sometimes people just can wallow a bit in. And it's
the important thing is, like you're saying, is from one side, you don't need to go around and telling to everybody.
No,
don't be.
I would really recommend that you don't, but I really recommend having a handful of people who are your confidants, the people that can check in with you. And the other thing is just to say to them, my top tip and advice for them is just to say, look, you are my chosen one. You are my chosen confidant. I'm going to come to you. I'm going to cry. I'm going to scream. I'm going to kick. Not you, but I'm going to get upset. I don't need you to give me advice.
Yes.
I just need you to let me cry.
Yeah. Be my sounding board. Like, just let me.
Just be my shoulder. Yeah. Please don't be.
Yeah.
Don't give me the advice. And especially when you've popped out three kids on your first try, please don't try and advise me. I mean, I'm going to share this story. Oh gosh, I don't know whether I should because she might, I don't think she'll ever listen to this. So that's fine. but one day my mother-in-law actually said to me that these were her words. I'm not even lying to you. I remember it so clearly. I'm standing in my hallway and she said to me, I was talking to some of the girls at work about your, and she went, situation, and gestured towards my stomach. Which, don't even get me started about the fact that actually it was, anyway, male factor at that point. And I was like, okay. I'm like, oh, where is this going? What is she going to say? Hey, why are you talking about my fertility to people? I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, besides that, bless her heart. Like, she just meant well, but of course. I'm going to laugh. She's like, and they said that when you do it, it being sex, make sure you put your legs in the air. And she's like now gesturing what I should be doing with my legs so that it all like sinks down and goes in.
I hear that one. And I practice that.
I mean,
even the same thing. Don't worry.
I mean, do you know what? Like that generation, how hard must it have been for her to have that conversation with me? Because they wouldn't have spoken about that kind of thing, nor would they have shared that they were going through that. But it got to a point where we actually had to say to our family, guys, this is what's going on. Because if one more person makes a jibe or a comment or something about kids or like just read the room, like we are being married for 6 years. There is no child. Clearly we love children. Like we're always babysitting and we're godparents and come on, there must be something going on here. Like you shouldn't have to say, but sometimes it is just worth it to say so that you don't get all the questions and actually then they can come around you and support you. I mean, I would refrain from sexual position advice, but it's just like,
I need that one. Don't worry. I read about that one as well. And I tried.
I mean,
that
it's
one.
A legitimate thing to do, by the way. Yeah. Like, I mean, I did everything but them and stand on my head to try and get pregnant and it didn't work. So like, honestly.
But this is the thing. I like what you're saying. First, share with people that you want to share with, but also tell them what you want from them. Which is
you have to communicate.
What super important that. Because
they've done marriage, you need to communicate what you need.
Exactly. Because they don't expect that because they want to help you, they're going to be constantly telling you things that you don't want to hear.
And so they don't understand. So again, maybe what I would advise doing, and this is something I did, was certainly for my parents whose generation didn't, you know, haven't know anyone that went through IVF before, is actually send them some very carefully selected resources to read around IVF and what the process, because again, it's fascinating when you really get under the hood of it, like the different kinds of IVF that you can have, like, you know, basically there's more than like the turkey baster style where they literally just put semen into you and let nature do its thing. But then there's also the process of ICSI, which we went through, which was actually where they take the egg, the best quality egg that they've extracted after you've had all the hormones. And that in itself was something I wasn't prepared for, by the way, that again, you need to realize with people and friends going through IVF is that you think, oh, you're going for IVF, great. And you've done all the drugs and you go in and you have this procedure to extract the eggs from you, which is absolutely can be quite painful. And I remember waking up from like the third time of having that done and just bursting into tears going, I'm never doing that again, because I was in so much pain. So you have the eggs, and then like this is the stuff that even when I went through my first round I didn't even comprehend that there was then they take the best sperm, then they put them together, and then it actually has to fertilize. And then it has to get to a certain point that they then go, okay, now we're going to put that fertilized egg back into you.
Yeah.
And then they put that egg back into you. So that process takes 3 days. So yeah. you're literally climbing the walls.
Yeah.
And then that goes back into you. And then this is what I didn't anticipate. There's a 10-day wait in order to have a blood test to see whether or not you're pregnant.
Yeah.
I did three of those, 3 10-day waits. So I waited the equivalent of a month.
Yeah.
3 times.
Scrutinating. In the head.
And then they call you on the phone and they deliver the news. So twice I got the news to say, I'm really sorry, it's not worked.
Yeah.
And the third time, when I fully didn't expect that it would work, it was my last egg, my last opportunity. That was it. It was the last roll of the dice because I knew I was never going to go through that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have some good news for you.
And then we have Jesse.
And now we have Jesse, who is 6 and sassy and just, I always say to people, she is my miracle. She actually has a hashtag, Jesse, our miracle. She is everything I wanted and more in one child. I feel like God triple million blessed me in one child because she's just everything. I want a little girl.
Yeah.
And the name Jessica actually has its origins in God's daughter. So a miracle from God. So for me, it was so miraculous. And I'd always wanted to call my child Jessica. And then I'd been on holiday the year before we started IVF and I'd gone into this like tacky gift shop in Wales. And I, you know, where they have like everyone's names on a key ring. And I saw, cause I'd always loved the name Jessica. I think it's probably cause I used to read Sweet Valley High books and Elizabeth and Jessica. And I saw Jessica and it said there, you know, child of God, God's blessing. And I was like, I remember buying
the key.
Still got it on my dressing table to this day. And I'm like, if I ever have a little girl, I'm going to call her Jessica.
What a wonderful story. I love that story.
And Jessie's actually the abbreviated because her great-grandmother's name was Jessie.
Oh, that is
so she actually doesn't like being called Jess, which I always have to warn people about. Like, she doesn't like Jess.
Yeah. He's like Grace. Grace is like, don't call me Gracie. I am Grace. It's like, okay, Grace.
Oh, yeah, I hope just sharing those little sort of snippets from my story and personal experience have maybe helped just to shed some light and maybe you can see your friend's story a little bit in my story, or maybe that you just had no idea about what was going on and all the waiting game. And I would always say to people, I didn't even feel like I had it that bad compared to some of my friends. And a lot of my friends have actually now gone on to have egg donations. So I would say from a financial point of view, if I could go back and do it again sooner, when I realized, you know, I still wanted another child at the time, I probably would have gone out to Europe. I probably would have gone somewhere like Spain. There's some great clinics out in Spain where you actually use egg donation as opposed to your own, because a lot of the time, you know, the women that donate these eggs are really young. They're 17, 18 years old. I think they have to be 18, sorry, just to.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're really young. And they, you
complain, know, complain.
Fresh eggs. I'm not a doctor. This is not scientific, you know. But yeah. And so that has been so helpful for some of my friends, because again, people don't realize you can have genetic disorders between you that prevent you, or if you do
so many things
easily, there's so many factors. So I would just say keep a very open mind about things and actually don't be afraid to look abroad, because what I would say about the UK is that it's big business and it's a big money-making scheme, and I know the likes of Panorama and stuff have done a lot of, you know, tell-alls about what's, you know, going on. And I would just say, if you feel, I mean, I sat in the IVF clinic and I just saw women handing their credit cards, cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And it was just relentless. And you can totally understand how it gets to that, because you are just so desperate.
Yeah.
So I would just say, you know, look at a package opportunity a lot of the time, because, you know, IVF 33% success rate, you can pay for a package of 3. So you've got like a 1 in 3 chance, that kind of thing. Go for package deals, but look abroad, because it is much more cost effective.
Yeah, definitely. That is a good one. So definitely find your circle of trust when you can express what you want from them and have that. Mm-hmm. Find communities or people or groups that can help you through the process. And then definitely do research about what are the best options for you. if you know, if you want, if
yeah, and it might not be logistical that you can go abroad. Some people, yeah. I mean, I chose a clinic that was around the corner from my husband's work, right. So that I could, he could come and meet me during lunch breaks and be with me in my appointments. So
yeah.
Sometimes you actually do have to just go for the practical.
Yeah, love that. Love that, Wendy. It's so nice to have you, because I want this episode to go like both ways, from the people who is going through, but also from the people from the outside. Like how can we, you know, how can we
understand? Yeah, and I just want to say, if you are one of those people that have said these things and you're like listening to me and you're going, oh, cringe, that was me, I totally said that. Like, all you need to do is just say to your friend, I'm really sorry. Like, I just had no idea. Like, but also just give yourself grace. You were just meaning well. So please don't beat yourself up about it. But hopefully that's just shed a bit of light on what can help support people.
Exactly. And one of the things, just to close, where can we find you? Because this is a conversation about your personal journey, but I know you help so many moms and women out there. So tell us, where can we find you?
Yeah, so the best place to find me is actually on my website, wendygriffith.co.uk. So that's a singular Griffith. Everyone tries to put an S on the end of my surname. But you can also find me on Instagram, Wendy Griffith, Thriving Mum. And yes, as a health, life, and also business coach for women, but specifically health and life coach, I have a membership called the Thriving Mum Club, and that's really designed to help women. And, you know, you are one of our experts as our career confidence coach. So I love that. And the whole ethos is really to support women with their health, their life, and their career through guest experts, group coaching, and also like our modules in the portal, the coaching,
so many things,
habits. Usually. It's such a full thing. It's basically all the things I wanted and needed when I became a mom. And so that's what I've put together for mums, and people can join that.
Yeah, definitely you need to go and check Thriving Mums, because when Wendy approached me and say, do you want to, like, yep, because one, I know everything that Wendy does is amazing. High quality. It's kind of like, you will find so much useful information, the guests that you put together, the modules that you have.
No, and I'm so excited. We've got you as our guest expert this month. You're talking about inner critic, how to control the inner critic as a mom. So I am. So excited for that. But yeah, we always talk about topical things for moms, burnout. Yeah. We did wardrobe last month, like how to reduce mental load. So all those are all in the portal. You can watch those back. So,
and that's the thing. It's kind of like you look around like this 360 or 180. Yes. Like every angle.
Feel fully supported. And the reason it's called the Thriving Mom Club is because I want it to be a place where women can come. They can pick and choose what they need. Exactly. In order to thrive. So there is a lot, but I wouldn't recommend using all of it, but just use what is going to help you to thrive. So whether it's nutrition or exercise, we've got, you know, exercise expert, all sorts of things. So it's amazing.
Thank you, Wendy. Now I'm leaving you because you need to go.
I know, I'm off to the beach.
To the beach. And my kids already arrived, so I need to see what we're going to do. But thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And guys, ladies, women, beautiful people, thank you so much, and see you in the next episode. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for staying with me until the end. And if you like this episode, give me a like and leave a review so I can reach as many people as possible and share the love. Also, you can subscribe and listen to this episode in Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. If you want the notes of this episode, go to www.la-mantuana.com/blog. Or if you want to connect with me, follow me on Instagram or Facebook at La Mantuana UK, or join my community, I Am Mantuana, on Instagram. I will love to connect with you. It was a pleasure talking to you today, but remember, everybody has a Mantuana inside. Stay with me and discover yours. See you next week. Bye.